Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's up?
Hey. Just pressing stuff.
Pressing stuff. Being George Jetson this morning, pushing buttons.
George Jetson. Oh, man. There's a whole generation now of kids who have no idea what that is.
Do you remember the Jetsons movie where they moved to, like, the some mining company, and it turned out they were, like, mining some little furry creatures' homes for the sprockets? I think it was like a big anti, like, I don't want to say anti business, but it had a message.
the only one that really stands out is when they met the Flintstones.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then I always loved the theory of the Jetsons lived in the sky and the Flintstones lived,
that it was set at the same time.
But... yeah.
That's funny. I liked the Jetsons episode of Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law. Did you ever watch that show?
Not really, no.
You should go back and check it out. It is really fun. For short little, you know, I think they're like 11, 12-minute episodes for the most part. It was really good. That's like the heyday of Adult Swim, before the dark times, before Tim and Eric. I pissed off someone. I no idea. I know I did. Anyways, hello everybody. Welcome to the Daily Cup of Genre here on the Genreverse Podcast Network and YouTube channel, where we talk about whatever the hell Manny and I really want to. Please hit the red subscribe button on YouTube if you're watching us there, and if you're listening on your favorite podcast app. I got the distribution stuff fixed, and we are apparently now on Amazon Music for podcasts as well. So give us a follow if you have the time and ability to leave a review, a comment, thumbs up or down, please. Please do. Especially on Apple. For some reason, others in the industry, they're like, if you don't have X amount of stuff on Apple, which makes up less than like 20% of the entire mobile device market, but yeah, anyways, if you don't have a certain amount of XYZ on Apple, we don't want to talk to you. And it's like, you know, they're not that big, guys.
That's what she said.
Relatively, I know, that's exactly what she said. I'm Kyle, that's Manny, if I didn't say that already. And I guess housekeeping is done, man. It's December 1st. Holy,
I know, crap. Dude, I know.
Like, where did 20, like, I thought 2021 felt like a fast year. 2022 just gone. Like, there was a bunch of storms in the south day before yesterday, night before last night, and something like 30 some odd tornadoes confirmed, and people were talking about how weird the weather has been. And I was like, holy crap, it's been a year since family friends of ours who lived in Mayfield, Kentucky. Mayfield got, you know, smacked by a massive tornado last December, and it's like, holy crap, has it already been a year for that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know where the time's gone, man.
Well, I mean, I've only been at my job exactly 1 year, and it feels like I've been there three, and not in the sense of that it like drags on or anything, but
just so much has happened.
Yeah, like yeah. A year ago, I was like, I don't know what the hell, like why am I even here? And now I'm like, I'm a veteran of the newsroom. Because I actually know how to do quite a few jobs, and because it's a mid-market, a lot of people come and go quite often. So I've already worked with like I feel like two or three cycles of employees. So I literally feel like I've been here forever. That's okay, because yeah. I didn't think I could soak it all in that quick. But I mean we're like. We already, I mean, like, it feels like just yesterday we were talking about the phase five of Marvel and mm-hmm. and the Flash and things like that. And now that's all that stuff is like right around the corner, literally. I think we had a decent year in entertainment, really. And I know it's just December and we still have a whole month, but, good stuff. It's just a lot of companies at this point have now realized that the error of their streaming ways, and and we have had our man. I told you so parties the last few days.
Yes. Freaking Bob Iger seems to be wanting to push more things towards theaters and maybe even potentially traditional TV, if that's still a thing. But limiting streaming is some feelings that we're hearing out of some of these meetings and memos and things that Iger has been releasing. And of course, most of it is just like third party details, not necessarily firsthand straight from Iger's mouth. But you know, the whole thing is and I can't remember what the story was. It was something about Glass Onion and someone saying, you know, it was money left on the table. Money left on table. Let me see if I can find who it was. Let's see here. Netflix CEO. And I just clicked on the first article that I found. Okay, so it comes out of Hollywood Reporter. GameSpot is who I clicked on. Let me bring this over real quick. Talking about movie ticket sales and things like that, they said it's a promotional tactic for the streaming service like film festivals, and if it works well, we will do more of it. And we are not trying to build a theatrical business. We are trying to break through the noise. Hastings also discussed Bob Iger's return, mentioned he felt Chapek was very disciplined. It's not like we saw any of the cracks. Made a joke about fundraising for Iger running for president. Where's the line about the money left on the table though? Okay, agreed. The streamer left money on the table with limited release instead of having it out there more. Okay, so they don't have a full quote there, but like he said, he's not trying to get into the theater business. But I mean, if you're leaving money on the table, I mean, think about just that phrase, and even someone admitting it, like someone whose business was started for home video, you know, first the internet DVD ordering side and then the streaming side, to literally be like, yeah, you know, we probably could have made more money. You and I have said that the biggest problem with streaming is trying to maintain the subscriber base by creating your own content. Like if you're just doing back catalog stuff, you know, a year after something's been released on in theaters and home video and your extensive back catalog, that's one thing. But once you start trying to produce content, that costs a hell of a lot more money. And the simple fact is that your subscriber base will never make enough money for you on their own for you to produce as much stuff as HBO Max and Disney Plus had been. I don't know, man. Well, here's my question to you then, Manny. Do the consumers ever actually go back? Like, can the studios rip the Band-Aid off and just cut the feed and say no more of this super fast to streaming? We're gonna make you wait 6 months. Will that make people go back to theaters and potentially buy home video? Like, will we see a return to discs?
Hell no. No.
Why not? We need it, guys. No,
that ship has sailed.
Terrible.
I really believe that ship has sailed. That industry is in the same boat as like the music industry. Everything's streaming. Everything is streaming.
So what do they do? It's not making money. It hurts the bottom line. So
you're gonna have to make cheaper movies.
What can a studio do?
That's what's gonna have to happen. It's really that simple. And
cheaper movies, you said?
Yep. You and I have talked about that too. And I think that Netflix may have found a good balance to it also, because they've really mastered the way that they do their content as far as streaming, and now mm-hmm. being able to add like limited releases for certain things, pairing that along with the release of physical copies at the end of the runs
I think they've
finally found a good balance, and like you just said, he during that what you read, it's really an experiment to see where the balance is. It's expensive to put movies in theaters. So then if you don't want to be in the theater business, which Netflix has never wanted to, I think one of the biggest reasons they've ever even considered it was because
awards.
Yeah, you need theatrical runs for awards. My thought would be to put things in theaters for at least 2 to 3 weeks.
For Netflix or just everyone?
For Netflix.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
2 to 3 weeks, just, or possibly just two. And because like Glass Onion, for example, did it for a week. A very good week too, because everybody had the opportunity to go out. Now there's good buzz. But yeah. What I liked what they did was it wasn't like theatrical run over, movie comes out on Friday. It's a whole month. that people have to wait now for streaming for the movie, but it has good buzz now, and it did good numbers. So now I feel like people are more likely to go in and check it out on Netflix, maybe rewatch it. I can't rewatch that kind of movie again, but for other films in the future, like I think that makes for optimal business. And I think Netflix has, despite, you know, being investing a ton of money in original content at some point, I think they got it down, whereas some of the bigger studios who tried to kind of do it backwards and kind of just like throw stuff at the wall, but expensive stuff at the wall, found themselves in quite the bit of a pickle there. So
I mean, you've seen a lot more of Netflix trying to make deals again and get things licensed instead of necessarily producing it themselves. You think of other deals for back catalogs for like Sony and stuff like that. I mean, look at HBO Max's recent, or Warner Brothers Discovery. We talked about it here on the show yesterday, putting DC animated stuff on Amazon instead of their own thing. Having someone else pay for part of the production on it. And one of the things that I'd always deemed Netflix for was how many of their originals they couldn't merchandise or could only merchandise very little. And whenever you think of, you know, what is the one thing that you can sell stuff for on Netflix, you immediately go to Stranger Things, from the physical copies, like you mentioned, to the shirts and figures. And that's like a merchandise, you know. Are you still good? Okay, you looked frozen, man. You look like dead still. I just want to make sure that I wasn't talking to no one on the internet. So many other things don't have that. They just don't have that. You know, rom-coms aren't going to sell t-shirts, you know. Mm-hmm. Thrillers, maybe some horror movies will. Kids stuff, of course you can sell toys. But you got to have additional revenue streams. And that was one of the things that, you know, Disney had on their side for a minute, was the parks. Yeah. But then the pandemic and all of that happened. I know there's two big things that hurt streaming, and that is people willing to wait because they know it's going to hit streaming in 2, 3, 4 months. I remember having to wait almost a year, if not more, sometimes it seemed, for movies to go from theater to home video. Like from the day they hit theater to the day they hit your home video could push a year. I mean, you had movies that spent 6 months, 7 months in theaters, and then they'd have the dirt dollar theater runs for another month or so, and then finally the VHS tapes would come out.
We still have those here in Clovis.
Oh, the dollar theaters.
Yeah, it's like $3 now, but yeah.
So I remember that, but now, you know, even before the pandemic, it was 4 months, man. It was 4 months from Endgame in theaters to Endgame on digital. People being willing to wait. And then the other problem is the piracy. You put a full HD movie online, people can rip it, and then they go out and share it. It's illegal. I'm not condoning it whatsoever, the act of giving or receiving pirated content. But it is literally super easy, barely an inconvenience. I mean, I've mentioned before, I'll take just using Firefox and OBS, and I can, you know, record little clips to use in videos, fair use policy type stuff. And if I can do it, others can, you know what I'm saying? So there's two things against putting content on a streaming service too quickly. If you do it, you're gonna lose a whole chunk of audience. And the other side of it is I can't express enough how important it is, guys, to buy physical copies of your favorite films. Do it now. The things that you and series, if you can get a physical copy of it, do it now, because it takes nothing but a expired contract or deal or a court order to see your digital library shut down, essentially. And then you've lost it all. And the money doesn't matter, because in the end user license agreement that you signed for the service, or in the terms of service for that particular digital store that you used, in the fine print, you're going to find that you're not entitled to it forever. Entertainment as a service is a scary thing, especially with games heading into that field so hardcore with Microsoft Game Pass, but whatever.
But like, I mean, like, it is what it is, man, as far as, you know, streaming. Like, that's, it's not like I'm saying, it's not gonna go back. And so you can't fault people for waiting for something that's the norm now. It's the industry that's going to have to continue to adapt and adjust. And like I said, just make less expensive content, or
less,
make their
less expensive,
or make more or make their streaming services more expensive or ad revenue and things like that.
That's coming.
and it's like basically tricking you into having cable again in some sense, but paying more. So it's almost like the pandemic really sped up all of this stuff. And say it's the same thing with groceries. And for example, we go to Target, we go to Sam's Club. We never go inside the store. We always have it. We always have it brought to our cars.
Oh,
if we have to go inside, it's almost seemed like an inconvenience. See, and it's a first world problem. But
yeah,
I mean, and a lot of times it's we need something. It's that just Amazon, just have it delivered to the house.
Part of the problem there is just the and I prefer to do in-person shopping because I don't want to be stuck in my house all the damn time. I'm not the world's most social person, as in like, hey, let's go to the bar and get drinks. But I am social in as much as I don't like being in my house all the time. I don't like big crowds and stuff like that, but I prefer to actually go and touch the objects that I'm wanting to purchase as much as I possibly can. But they make it so freaking difficult by having next to no cashiers. They have lots of people that do stocking and stuff like that, but they don't train them on cashier jobs because they want to go with the automated things. And you end up with someone with a full freaking basket, groceries or household goods from like a Target, using the self-checkout lane. It's like a basket full of 40 freaking items, 50 items. And you're just like, why is no one saying, you get out of the line, we'll open up this red. It makes it painful to shop in person, but there's a whole slew of additional effects that come with having more automated and less in-person shopping. You think about the maintenance people that are going to lose their jobs. You think about the janitorial staff that won't be required, the amount of cashiers stocking stalkers as robots, you know, pick up more. I don't think people understand how connected everything is. It's just like when I talk about movie budgets, you talk about making cheaper movies, cheaper TV shows. If you have a series that for the last 3-4 years has been bringing a crew of 1,000 people to a town, or let's go 500 people to a cast and crew, 500 people to a town to film every year the season of this show, that's a big boost for that local economy. And now with cheaper budgets, you say maybe you cut it down to only 300 cast and crew. Mm-hmm. That hurts everyone else in that town who had been relying on the bigger production. It's all unlike the MCU before Fox and all that. It's not all, or it is all connected. Marvel wasn't. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Pretended to be, and so did our beloved Netflix series.
I get it, but at the same time, like I don't blame McDonald's for going to full automated menus, systems, and apps because of the fact that, like, people working at McDonald's want to be making like $20 an hour.
Like, I don't blame them either.
The thing is, I don't feel like working at McDonald's should be something you should be trying to, you know, live off of. I think traditionally that's a starter job.
Yeah,
that's your college
or a
kid
secondary
job.
That's yeah. Your
but
I'm killing time on the weekends to earn some extra.
But if there's states bucks. that want to raise that minimum wage to that level as a business owner, because I mean, like, you and I all, like, we're not saying we like it, but we understand mm-hmm. it as a business. I'm gonna make the decision, well, screw it then, we'll go automated then, and you'll save yourself some money. And The entire world, as far as that has to, is adapting and changing. And I think that, like I said earlier, the pandemic just sped it all up. You know, maybe it was going to be rolled out a little bit quick, a little a little bit more pace, but now it's just there. Now, you know, we got a little, we went a little
deep.
I don't know where we went, but I'm gonna go find ourselves. What I asked you yesterday, I wanted to talk about, because I think it'd be, I thought it was funny.
What was it again?
should Universal hold the Hulk and Neymar over Marvel's head and say, we're going to make standalone films? What do you think?
I think it would be a power move. I wonder what the contract is. Would they be able to use Ruffalo, or would they have to use a different actor? Would it create another Sony situation?
Would it create another where, yeah,
like Morbius and the what is and what isn't connected? And oh my God, Madam Web scares the frack out of me. Talk about something that looks stupid. And Kraven, oh God, yeah, you even cast someone that was in the MCU, yeah, and you guys are like, oh, we're connected to the MCU. I hate you so much, Sony. So it would be a big power move, though. They could threaten, well, we're going to make our own stuff, and we can do X, Y, Z and muddy the water. Does that get Marvel to offer more money? Or yeah, is Universal holding on to it in case Marvel falters and falls? You know, if Phase 5 is another Phase 4, I could see Universal potentially saying, you know, we could offer you something different. You know, I don't like the idea, but I could see them doing it.
they're not going to falter. There's too many apologists for Marvel that are always going to say it's good. And as we've seen by box office numbers, it's always going to do good as well.
It's going to do all right to good. Not all of them have done good. Most of them have done all right relative to the situation.
Compared to other movies in the industry, yeah, in general. Yes. I mean, if I'm Universal, I might just poke the bear and see what happens and kind of threaten them with it and then say, all right, cool, then let's work together. And then
yeah,
they'd have to go, wait, what? because for example, a Neymar movie at this point would do really well.
Probably.
Yeah. And
what story would you tell, though? What would be his antagonist in that situation?
I have no idea. If I'm Universal, I don't have an idea either. All I want to do is rock the boat. And so I think that it'd just be funny to a Hulk movie would do well, because people would be like, "Oh, we want a Hulk movie."
Do you remember Ang Lee's Hulk?
I don't think anyone does, but for good reason. It was man.
Dude, just wait until wait until Secret Wars, where people are like, "Oh, bring back Eric Bana's Hulk." It's gonna happen. You're gonna see people do that. Someone out there thinks that's a better Hulk movie than Incredible Hulk or Ruffalo as Bruce. Someone out there, some pissant Gen Zer, young millennial. I'm pissing people off. Don't care, because that movie was trash. Kind of like the majority of the X-Men movies.
The only X-Men movie I really liked was Days of Future Past.
It was fine.
Like, and that's kind of because like the bar was really low, maybe.
Yes. And everyone loves Quicksilver's really cool scene, which is true. It is a really cool scene, and then they repeated it again.
But I think one of their biggest mistakes was casting what's her name, Jennifer.
Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence, because. Yeah. She was so expensive, it became all about her.
Yeah, and not only that, but she wouldn't freaking stay in makeup. She's supposed to be one of the biggest, proudest
mutants
out there. And she just didn't want to do the makeup. Jennifer Lawrence, you suck. Sorry.
Yeah, you shouldn't have never taken the character if that was going to be your stance.
Exactly. It's kind of like people that complain about being in masked or helmeted characters. Cope, I'm sorry. Time out of it, but the majority of the time you're going to be in it.
Both Halo and The Mandalorian, I was a custom out immediately because it's like, first thing they do, take off their helmet. It's like, guys, like, I was.
It took a while for Mando to take his off, though.
It didn't take that long. And it's kind of annoying. But I think that just because of how well the characters are doing, I would almost do it as a bluff, just to see what happens. Maybe they already have. Who knows? But just be like, hey, we're gonna start developing a movie.
If you guys don't do World War Hulk, we will.
Yeah.
Now Marvel's like, oh crap, now we got to do that god awful storyline.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we'll do something like that, and then it's just like, and it would be funny. I think it'd be funny, and I think it'd be interesting to see how Disney would react, because it's interesting that they have the rights to Marvel characters at Islands of Adventure, specific characters, of course, and they have the rights to Neymar and the Hulk, and they could just sit on it some degree. I'll
tell you what, man, I love Marvel Superhero Island at Islands of Adventure. It's one of my favorite places to be at in Universal. The Hulk ride is a blast. The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man, one of the best rides out there. If you've ridden Transformers, have you done Transformers in Hollywood? Okay, it's basically the same thing. Oh, okay. Just Spider-Man instead. Spider-Man came first. You know, it was there when it opened in 90. Yeah, like no, wait, I was 16. So what is that?
1985 maybe.
2001. I think the park opened in like 99, and I went for the first time in like 2000, 2001.
Nice.
It's an amazing ride. Haha, amazing Spider-Man. Where was I going? I love it there, and I have no interest in Avengers Campus. None whatsoever. I do not give two craps to go play laser tag with some stupid thing and do this on a ride for 2.5 minutes. I would rather sit in the ride and have Spider-Man sling me around New York City as Doc Ock tries to tear apart the Statue of Liberty. Like, that's the Spider-Man type of experience I want. Disney's parks are boring for thrill seekers. I'll just leave it at that. I know it's not about the thrills. I got that. But for me, I'm a Universal can deliver thrills and immersion. And I will pick that.
Yeah, I will. I will pick. Well, to be fair, Disney does offer immersion if you like Disney.
Yeah, that's that is their thing. It's immersion only, not thrill, not thrills.
But for me, I'll go to Six Flags 10 times before I go to Disneyland once. And and given the current prices, I could probably go 3 times before I go.
Absolutely. And I would choose Magic Mountain over. I'd choose Knott's Berry over.
That's a little bit of a stretch. Knott's Berry, not that great.
They at least have roller coasters, like ones. Yeah. Not Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Yeah, I'd rather go ride Tatsuo because it's one of my favorite rides. Tatsuo. The Batman, the Riddler, Scream, to name a few.
Scream's good. I like X too.
X. It was X3 now.
Is it X3 now? They really upgraded again.
Yeah, I think it is. Or X2, X3, I don't know, one of those.
X2, last I had been on it years ago.
But it's just like, I don't know. Like, I think the problem with Disney is that, and you can see it in their product, they don't have to try.
Yeah.
Like, they could just be like, oh, this is the magical world of Disney, and it's so, like, compelling. So here is this shape in the shape of a mouth, and people are like, oh my god, it's a rock, it's a Disney rock. I don't know, it's just like, it's, to me, it just doesn't feel like, for a lot of their things, they feel like they have to try very hard, especially in their parks.
it's just like Apple, man. All you got to do is slap an Apple logo on it and you can sell it at a huge markup despite how crippled or old the technology and the device really, truly is. And people will eat it up.
Yeah. And eat then, like, I use Apple, but just for the convenience of my
I'm not knocking all Apple users. That's target at the fanboys and girls, oh my god Apple's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Well, these statistics and the cost to performance says that it's not the greatest thing since. No, I don't give a crap about that. I just love Apple. Like, those are the people I'm kind of digging at, not the casual it works for me user,
because
the people that line up two days ahead of release.
Yeah, because I'll never buy a MacBook. Like, I'm always going to use a PC. Like, that's never going to happen. I have an iPad, a watch, and a iPhone that all talk to each other and make me happy, because they do. In the same vein, it's just like Strange World, for example. Like, they did a little bit of marketing for it, but mm-hmm. it almost feel like, and they put a lot of effort into it. Yes, and I know this because I spoke with the animators. I met them. But it's like, okay, what is the story? What is going to be so iconic? Like, when you created the world of Frozen, mm-hmm. for example, that was, I'm not saying innovative, but that's like as close as classic Disney has probably have gotten. Moana is probably very close, but I think that's where they started to
overall.
That's kind of where they started maybe losing it a little, because even Encanto wasn't even that like iconic to say, like it's Moana probably might be the last one in the line of films recently, I feel, that kind of captured that essence that they've always had. And then also the last 2D really, I would say, masterpiece that they had was The Princess and the Frog. And then after that, like, recently, it's like, yeah, their movies are okay, but, and I'm not knocking DreamWorks, please do not, but now they're getting into like DreamWorks level where it's kind of like you're regressing.
I like some of the Illumination studios, because DreamWorks.
I think How to Train Your Dragon is very underrated, and obviously Shrek is a masterpiece just because of everything it was able to create. There's some other really good ones, but Illumination, the bad guys was really good. Their style of animation was a little bit different, and it was really cool to see. And of course, the Minions are like, I you know what? And the thing is, I don't understand the Minions, literally, and also, in how they work in a movie, because, that movie did stupid numbers, and it's literally just the Minions. And you can make the same movie again, and the same people are gonna go watch it, including me. I don't, you know, you created something with them. I don't know.
Yeah. I had one other story. I was gonna segue into it back when we were talking Universal's stuff with the Marvel characters. Ang Lee, that was going to be my segue, is directing the Bruce Lee biopic, a Bruce Lee biopic from everyone's favorite studio, Sony.
Mm-hmm.
His son, Mason Lee, not Bruce's son, Ang's son, Mason Lee is attached to star in the film. Ang Lee, for those of you that might not know, is a very talented and very diverse as far as in types of films that he's done, director. We mentioned Hulk, of course. Some of you might not know, or might not know, he did Sense and Sensibility. Other rom-coms, he did Brokeback Mountain. Most people, of course, know Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Most recently, 2019's Gemini Man, which I don't think that hit so well for most people. I didn't see it though. What do you think about that, man? What do you think about bringing Ang Lee in to do a Bruce Lee biopic?
I don't know enough about him to really have formulated an opinion about it.
Well, what about just getting a Bruce Lee biopic in general? You and I are both big martial arts.
Yeah, I also don't know how I feel about that, because the family has really been outspoken before about the way that Bruce Lee has been portrayed in films.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless you really have the blessing of the family, like, yeah, don't do it. But I mean, just ask Netflix about doing all these murder shows about people that are literally still trying to get over the trauma. So it's a dicey subject. It just depends on how they do it, I guess.
Mm.
But I think based on how long ago it was, yeah, I think it might be a good time to get to take a look at his life and kind of some of his accomplishments and why he's as special as he is, because we're getting to a generation now that has no idea really who Bruce Lee is. Yeah.
That's true. And unfortunate.
Because Enter the Dragon's just getting older. But yeah. I love that movie so much.
And it's not that we can't have modern day martial arts film stars. Everyone, of course, would think of Jackie Chan and Jet Li. But of course, you can't forget. Oh, crap. And I just forgot his name. Ip Man. Freaking Danny. He was in Rogue One. Danny. What is his last name? God dang it. Anyways, there are modern ones, but yeah, you don't want to lose those classics, you know? Bruce Lee's one of those stories that is incredibly interesting just on the Donnie Yen. There we go. Donnie Yen.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And you've got Bruce Lee's personal story of just his. And there's going to be controversy, especially from anyone from back then. You're talking 1973 when he died. You might have controversy, and people have things. They'll be like, oh, we don't want to talk about X, Y, Z. But Bruce had one of the most dedicated work ethics, the willpower mm-hmm. of this man to become a perfect martial artist, a perfect entertainer, he sought perfection in as much as he possibly could, and the fact that this relatively tiny little dude could pack a punch that people twice his size and weight couldn't fathom of delivering is insane. And I've always really appreciated that aspect. You can take a lot of words from Bruce and apply them to almost anything in life and probably end up with a much better outcome than the good old college try, if you will. So I'm excited about it. Relatively, Aang, like I said, he's got his misses, he's got his hits. I've never, as far as I know, I don't think I've seen anything Mason Lee has been in. But yeah,
all right, that's real it. Quick then.
Sure.
Did you watch the trailer for Cocaine Bear?
Yeah, I did.
What's insane is that that's actually based on a true story.
Well, yeah, the bear did get a hold of a bunch of cocaine that fell out of a plane in Georgia.
Something like that. I don't know.
They said that the mayhem here is played up, though.
Oh,
so,
well, duh. Yeah. I mean, yeah. but I mean,
but it is still insane.
It's a good inspiration. Like, the trailer is so, like, it's just really over the top. And I thought it was, it looks fun. So,
yeah. That, it's from Elizabeth Banks. I did not know.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Oh. Well, at least that's what they said on the news. Let me double check that.
Well, if it is, she should be kind of quiet based on.
Yeah, she directed it. Yeah, she should not open her mouth.
Yeah, because last time she told men not to watch it, her movie, and then was like, why didn't men go watch my movie?
Because you said not to.
So So
it'll be one of the last, if not the last, film Ray Liotta, the late Ray.
That is his last film, and boy, did they give him some hair in that film.
Yeah, they did. I'll definitely, that's one that's on the list to check out. So yeah, anyways, guys, that's gonna do it for today. We managed to string you along for 40 almost 45 minutes. Be sure to check out lrmonline.com every day for all entertainment news needs, opinions, written reviews, news, celebrity interviews that also go up on the LRM YouTube channel. You can see Nancy doing a Spanish language interview on the page right now. All of our podcasts, like the Daily Cup of Genre, Breaking Geek Radio, Anime Versal Reviews, The Cantina, Marvel Multiverse Mayhem, all go up on your favorite podcast app, so give us a follow there. And of course, they go up on YouTube as well. Hit the red subscribe button for that, as well as trailer reactions, anime reactions. If you're into anime, we are a place to be. Manny, what else you got? Anything else?
In a few minutes, I'll have up on the site, or by the time this comes out, whatever. It'll be there. An interview with Jeff Kinney. He is the creator and director, producer for all of the animated Diary of a Wimpy Kid. So they're doing the second book now, which is Broderick Rules. So I spoke with him for a few minutes on kind of some of the differences in the book versus the film, the animation style, and kind of what can he think of next, because I think he just released another book in October. He thinks that these movies are going to outlive him and they just might. I have that tomorrow. Jason and I will venture to LA in the morning after our podcast, and so we'll begin our coverage there. We already have a couple of things lined up as far as things to see, people to talk to, and so we'll be there Friday, Saturday, and a good chunk of Sunday.
You gotta call in for the show. Well, no, it'd be way too early. So
no, I'll be
on Friday.
No, tomorrow's Friday. I don't leave until like 9, so that'll be fine.
Cool. Alrighty then. Alright guys, that'll do it. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.